So we've already talked about last night, Dad introduced this concept to us of looking to build and improve in our relationships. And he suggested last night that one of the primary keys is good communication, which begins first by listening in order to understand. And then after we have understood, we can focus on sharing our thoughts in a clear and helpful, edifying manner that is according to the need of the moment. And that might rightly be described as more of an action. Communication is an action. In fact, neither listening nor speaking are passive. Both require deliberate choice and deliberate action. But there are more things than just actions that contribute to meaningful and enduring relationships. For example, there are certain qualities of character that if possessed, they will positively support and enrich the actions in which we engage within our various relationships. And so this afternoon, I want to talk with you all about two such characteristics or character qualities that we need to be demonstrating towards others within whom we are in relationships. And I want to try to see how those character qualities will positively impact our relationships with others. And those two qualities are humility and selflessness. Now, we need to begin our discussion this afternoon and our study by properly defining these terms of humility and selflessness. Because, honestly, these are attributes that we rarely get right in our thinking, and therefore, we rarely get them right in our application either. If you start out thinking that something is what it actually isn't, then you're never going to be able to accurately apply that. And so we need to understand what we're talking about by humility and selflessness today, and if we hope to see how those will positively impact our relationships. For me, sometimes when I begin to try to wrap my mind around what something means, it's helpful for me anyway to look at its opposite. If I can understand what it's not, it's a little bit easier to understand and grasp what it is. So the first thing that comes to my mind when I'm thinking about the opposites of humility and selflessness is the concept of pride. Pride is defined as an exaggerated self-esteem. That is, thinking more of yourself than what the facts warrant. Pride says, I'm number one. I'm the best. I don't need anyone or anything else. I can do it all on my own. Pride puts self forward, wants to step into the spotlight and exalt one's self. Everybody, look at me. That's what pride does. And that is the opposite of humility. Some of the synonyms for pride that maybe we use, maybe you have been called some of these things, or maybe you have called somebody some of these things: conceited, or haughty, or arrogant, smug, stuck up, big-headed. I know that's one I've been labeled as before. Pompous, egotistical. That last one is interesting to me. The adjective egotistical is defined as having, showing, or arising from an exaggerated sense of self-importance. You think you're more important than what you actually are. In fact, it comes from the noun egotism, which is actually the etymology of that word. You can see it, ego, the beginning, is the Greek word for I. And an ism in English is any kind of philosophy or system of thinking or ideology. And so egotism is a philosophy. It's a way of thinking that's all about me. We can see how this overly, unjustifiably inflated sense of oneself then is related and connected to the concept of selfishness. Someone who is selfish is someone who's concerned excessively or exclusively with themselves. seeking or concentrating on their own advantage, pleasure, or well-being without, and this is the most important part of the definition, without regard for others. Now, it's akin to the idea of being self-willed. That is, having a my way or the highway kind of approach to life. The selfish person always has to be in control of almost everything. They're not willing to entertain the thoughts or the ideas of anyone else about anything else. In fact, the selfish individual oftentimes will have the attitude that says, you know, if you don't want to do it my way, well, then good riddance to you. It's almost as if they think their way is the only way that anything could possibly be done. Or maybe coupled with pride, you might say it, my way might not be the only way that it could be done, but it's the only right way. It's the only logical way. It's the only good way to do something, because after all, I know best. These kind of characteristics are not only prohibited by God for his children. In fact, we can look at some scripture in Proverbs chapter 16 and in verse 5. There the proverb writer says, "Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord, and assuredly he will be punished." In other words, God is saying here, I don't like the proud attitude. I don't like this self-centered approach to life. And if you have that kind of a heart, this puffed up, proud, arrogant heart, not only are you displeasing to God, God says here, eventually you will be punished for that. Which is why, for example, in James chapter 4 and verse 6 and in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 5, both quoting from the Psalms, it talks about the idea that God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And in Titus chapter 1 and in verse 7 there, among many characteristics that those who are going to serve as elders must possess, one of the things that Paul says is that the guy cannot be self-willed. He can't have this my way or the highway kind of attitude. But I want you to understand that not only are these negative attributes prohibited or condemned in Scripture, that by definition, they are antithetical, that is, opposing or antagonistic to the concept of relationships. Because relationships, by definition, require the interaction and engagement of more than one person. Me with others. That's what makes relationship. And pride says, I don't need anybody else. Selfishness says, it's all about me, which is the opposite of what a relationship is all about. So we can't have a self-centered, a self-obsessed, or a my way or the highway approach to our relationships and interactions with others. At least not if we want to actually have relationships with others. And so part of being humble and being selfless is to recognize that I'm not the center of the universe. The world doesn't revolve around me. And that's also true of my relationships with other people. Those relationships that I'm in, they don't revolve around me. I'm not the center of the relationship. In fact, there's a sense in which, when you think about your own life, you're not even the center of your own life. Your own life doesn't revolve around you. It's not exclusively about you. In Acts chapter 17 and verse 27, Paul talks about the idea that God and from him came all things, including man, and that God created man and put him here on earth and set the boundaries of his habitation and appointed the length of his days, and he put him here that we would seek God. And so if you ever wondered about the question of life, why are we here? Why do I exist? That's the answer. You exist to pursue a relationship with your Creator. And by extension, a relationship with those around you. We were put here to seek and serve God. And one of the ways in which we do that is by serving those around us with whom we have relationships. So recognize that it's not all about you. The world doesn't revolve around you. Your life doesn't revolve around you. And your relationships don't revolve around you. But let me caution us here that we have to be careful not to allow the pendulum to swing too far in the opposite direction. If we know that humility and selflessness means it's not all about me, let's not assume then that it must mean it has nothing to do with me. In fact, humility is not in any way suggesting that we undervalue ourselves or that we underestimate our own importance. To treat yourself as worthless or to treat yourself as dirt or to treat yourself as worth less than dirt, that's not true humility. If anything, it's maybe having a low self-esteem or no self-esteem. But that's not what humility is. Humility doesn't mean I count myself as worth nothing. And selflessness, also, it does not necessitate the total exclusion of self from the equation. Perhaps that might rightly be defined as self-denial, right? To deny your existence, to deny yourself. But that's not what selflessness entails. When we start to look into Scripture and see what does true humility and selflessness look like, what we find is that we're supposed to have a realistic, healthy, and objective view of ourselves in relation to those around us. Notice in Romans chapter 12. In Romans chapter 12, beginning in verse 3, the Apostle Paul says, "For through the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think." Right? Don't think that you are more important than what you actually are. Don't be proud in your view and estimation of yourself. But notice he doesn't say, go to the opposite extreme and think that you're nothing. He contrasts this haughty, proud view of oneself, thinking too much of yourself, with sound judgment. He says, don't think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each a portion of faith. The idea here of thinking with sound judgment is the idea of to think soberly about yourself. To think rightly or objectively about yourself. And arguably that's something that we are very lax in doing. We have a hard time being objective when it comes to evaluating ourselves. But that's what Paul is calling upon us here to do. He's saying when you value yourself, when you estimate your importance, you need to do it objectively. Don't inflate yourself. But at the same time, don't undervalue yourself. The context here of Romans chapter 12 would suggest that one of the things Paul is talking about is the abilities, the talents that each of us have within the body of Christ. We don't all have the same role or the same function. We don't all have the same ability or the same capabilities. And that's okay. In fact, we're not supposed to. God likes variety, and oftentimes he makes things work better when we take people who have complementary talents and abilities, and he puts them together, and what we couldn't do by ourselves, now we can accomplish by working together with others. And here in this whole section, Paul is suggesting that though we all have different abilities, different talents, though we're all different, we are all essential. There's nobody who is expendable or dispensable in the eyes of God. We all have some value. We all have something that we can bring to the table. And if we would start to have that kind of an attitude towards one another, it's going to change the way that we view our brethren in particular. Notice if you jump down in the text in verse 15, he says that we're to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Why? Because we're being of the same mind toward one another. Don't be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. I'm not better than you. Yes, what I do may be different than what you do. I may look different. I may not look as good as you or something like that, but I'm not better than you. You're not better than me. We all need one another to function well together. Do not be wise in your own estimation. That's another way of saying don't overvalue yourself. Don't think more of yourself than you ought to. And so when we start having this kind of attitude towards one another, we will, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 25 through 27, which is kind of a parallel text to what he's talking about there in Romans chapter 12. But he makes this observation that if we'll have this attitude, there's going to be no divisions in the body, but the members are going to have the same care for one another. We're going to value one another properly. When we start to value ourselves properly, it helps us to value one another properly. And if one member suffers, all the members will suffer with it. And if one is honored, all the members rejoice with it. We have that mutual care for one another. Because I'm not thinking I'm better than anybody else. Nobody's better than me. We're all in this together. That's what humility means. And furthermore, let's go to Philippians chapter 2. Because I think this text here also makes it clear that humility and selflessness do not mean that I have to be totally removed from the equation, that I can't factor into any decision that I make. Notice what Paul says here. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3, he says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit." Okay, if that was all that he said, it might be leaving us a little bit vague about what does he mean here. If I can't do anything from selfishness or empty deceit, does that mean that I just don't think about myself at all whatsoever, never? Is this if I don't exist? Well, no, he goes on and says, in contrast to the selfishness and empty conceit, the pridefulness, he says, "But with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves." Put others ahead of yourself. Again, does that mean that I am of no value whatsoever? Well, he doesn't stop there. Verse 4, he says, "Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also the interests of others." And so understand that humility and selflessness doesn't mean that I am nothing, that I'm not important whatsoever, that what I want, what I need is irrelevant. What it says, though, is that I'm going to put my needs, my wants, are going to be weighed right alongside of what everybody else needs and what everybody else wants. And in fact, when it comes right down to it, I need to be willing to put the needs and wants of others ahead of my own. And so being selfless here suggests, just as the word implies, not self-denial, but thinking less about self. Well, if you're thinking less about self, that still implies you're thinking some about yourself, right? You're not totally out of the picture. But it causes us to prioritize others ahead of ourselves. We're not just looking out anymore, as a child of God, certainly, we're not just looking out anymore exclusively for our own benefit. You know, it used to be maybe when I was a young guy, single, not married, that I could do what I wanted to do. You know, if I wanted to go fishing or I wanted to go, do something on my own, well, I didn't really have anybody that was depending on me. And so I could go out and do what I wanted to do. Once I got married, I couldn't do that anymore because I had somebody who was depending on me. And certainly now that I have kids, I don't get to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it without giving some consideration to how is that going to affect my wife and my kids. So we're not just looking out for ourselves, we're also very interested in the well-being of others. We are concerned how our choices, how our actions are going to affect those around us, either positively or negatively. And just because a decision or a course of action benefits me, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the decision or course of action that I should take. In fact, it may not even be a good decision or course of action given the circumstances and who it may negatively affect. You see, the humble and selfless individual will be asking themselves about every decision, every choice that they make. They're going to be asking themselves, what is best for everyone involved? It's not just about me. It's about how I affect everyone with my choices and my actions. That's what it really means to be humble and selfless. Let's spend a few minutes here talking about looking at some practical benefits that having these kinds of character qualities, humility and selflessness, how they're going to benefit our relationships, what it would look like in our lives. And I want to start kind of general and broad, and then we'll work towards some more specific applications within specific relationships. But in a general sense, and I hope you'll see that these things are going to affect many different relationships, whether that's spouse relationships, husbands and wives, parents and children, or your extended family, or your neighbors, or even your church family. The first thing that I think about, though, when I think about properly estimating ourselves, that is avoiding pride and selfishness, being self-willed, if I really have humility and selflessness as a motivation in my life, it's going to enable me to admit my shortcomings. It's gonna enable me to own up to when I'm wrong, when I've made a mistake. Yet pride is the thing that prevents you from wanting to admit that you're wrong. Humility says, you know what? I need to own that. I need to acknowledge the wrong that I've done. But also, humility helps us to admit when we simply don't know the answer. You know, there's nothing more aggravating to me when you're talking with somebody. Maybe it's somebody who's in a teaching position or somebody who's in a position of authority at work or something like that. And you're talking to them, you ask them a question, and it's clear, they're just blowing smoke. They don't have the slightest idea what the right answer is, but they're just going to fill the air with enough words until you kind of leave them alone. They're going to try to make themselves sound like they know what's right. That's arrogant. It takes humility when somebody comes and asks you a question and you don't know the answer. It takes humility to say, you know what, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. I'll sure look into it. I'll see if I can't figure it out. But as I stand before you today, I don't know. It takes humility to be able to do that. Humility will enable us to have that approach when we are pressed with hard questions. It'll also help us to ask for help when we need help. Whether that's, I can't figure this one out on my own. I need some help, guys. Help me out. Or maybe you're struggling with something that is just beyond your ability, even physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I need help. Please help me. It takes humility to do that in your relationships. Humility helps us to recognize that we're not always going to be right about everything. But what's more than that, it not only helps us to recognize that, it helps us to be at peace with that reality. If I'm humble, I can accept the fact that I don't have to be right about every issue or have the right answer for everything. That's okay. Everybody doesn't have to agree with me 100% of the time. And that's okay. Humility says, you know what? I'm cool with that. Because I'm not the end-all be-all of everything. Another thing that humility and selflessness will enable us to do is to communicate with one another more effectively. I'll tell you, nothing shuts down conversation more than the attitude that says, I'm right, you're wrong. because it almost wants to be followed up by a shut up, right? I'm right, you're wrong, shut up. That's how that sounds. You want to shut down communication and conversation? Present yourself as though you know all the answers and everybody else is stupid. Humility and selflessness doesn't allow us to have that kind of attitude, though. In fact, humility and selflessness, when we're engaged in conversation with others, it's going to help open us up to being more receptive to what others have to say. I'm not any more important than you. I'm not any better than you are. Why would my opinion mean more than yours? I want to hear what your opinion is. I want to know what you're thinking. Because after all, you're just as valuable as I am. And so I want to know what's really on your mind. Having humility and selflessness, I believe, is really going to help us to become better listeners. It's that attitude that we need to have that motivates us to want to listen to what others have to say. And so when others are sharing with us what they have to say, and we're listening attentively, whether they're sharing their opinion or whether they're sharing a critique or maybe they're sharing some honest criticism of me, if I'm humble, I'm going to want to hear what they have to say so that I can learn something valuable from it. In Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 15, these are proverbs that I probably need to have my wife write down on a nice piece of paper in some nice font, and we need to start posting them around the house so that I can be seeing these things more often. But notice what Proverbs 12 and verse 15 says. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. I've been a fool far too often. Because I oftentimes approach things from the standpoint of, I'm right, you're wrong. The wise thing to do would be for me to shut up and listen to you. I might actually learn something valuable. Proverbs is full of these kinds of ideas. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 5. There, a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 9. There the proverb writer says, give instruction to a wise man and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man and he will increase in his learning. Proverbs chapter 19 and in verse 20. There the proverb writer says, listen to counsel and accept discipline that you may be wise the rest of your days. It really takes some humility to be able to accept from others, especially those critiques and criticisms of your behavior and your conduct. Another thing that humility and selflessness will help us to do is it's going to help us to share the spotlight with other people. It's going to help us to not have an attitude that wants to promote ourselves and put ourselves forward all the time. We're not going to be drawing undue attention to ourselves. Instead, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be trying to share the spotlight with others, putting them ahead of ourselves. Maybe it's something as simple as just letting others go first. Right? When you get to the grocery store, to the restaurant, and you've got some people walking behind you, think to yourself for a second, do you open that door and do you stand there and hold that for other people to come in first? Or do you go on in ahead and let them get the door on their own? What about when you're waiting in line at Aldi's and you've only got one item and the person in front of you is unloading their cart onto the conveyor belt? What do you think? Are you happy when they say, oh, you've only got one item, go ahead? Or do you say, you know what? No, you were here first. I'm fine to wait my turn. Even though arguably you could be out of there much quicker, do you still let them go first? What about when you're finding a spot in the parking lot It's always wonderful when you see that spot right next to the door, isn't it? Oh, God meant that just for me, and you whip right in there. Or do you say, you know what? Somebody else could use that spot more than me. And so I'll park down here at the end. I'm young, I'm healthy, I can walk. And even those of us who are older, we still think of ourselves as young and healthy and we can walk, right? Leave that spot for somebody else. That's what selflessness helps us to do. You know, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6, verses 2 through 4, when you give to the poor, don't sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and in the streets, so that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret, and your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. It's so easy to want to congratulate ourselves or do things in such a way that it draws attention to ourselves. But think about this for a second. How do you feel when somebody compliments you about something, a job well done? Do you just eat it up? Does it make your head get big? Or does it make you a little bit uncomfortable? Because that's the attitude we need to have. That when somebody praises us, we're quick to turn it around and say, don't look at me, look at my God. He's the one who enabled me to do that or to know what to say. Humility and selflessness, it's not about me, helps us to have that attitude, to turn the praise around and give it to whom it's due. Humility and selflessness will also help us to serve others with a proper attitude. Think for a second, how do you feel when somebody gets sick? Maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's your kids, maybe it's the neighbor, maybe it's somebody else in your family, I don't know. Is your first thought, boy, I'm sure glad they're sick, not me. That would stink. I would suggest that's kind of a selfish attitude. Maybe you're not quite that bad, but you're kind of like, oh man, now I'm going to have to pick up the slack around the house. I'm going to have to take care of her while she's not feeling well. Oh, is that your attitude? A humble, selfless attitude would look at something like that and say, you know what? This is a great opportunity for me now to be able to show some love and appreciation for my spouse or for my kids. And we look at those things not as a drudgery, but as an opportunity where now I get to serve somebody else. That's what a humble and selfless attitude would help us to be able to do. Because a humble and selfless person really wants what is best for the other individual. Let's think about for a minute in some specific relationships. As married couples, if we'll have humility and selflessness, we're going to be approaching our relationship with one another from the standpoint of being co-equal partners. I know in Ephesians chapter 5, Paul says that husbands are the head of their wives. But understand, that doesn't mean you're the taskmaster. That doesn't mean that you're the king. That doesn't mean that you get to rule over your wife with an iron fist or keep her under your thumb. No, rather contextually what that means there is that we selflessly serve our wives, looking to and providing for her needs ahead of our own. For that matter, wives are told to be subject to your own husbands. But don't think too lowly of yourselves, wives. That doesn't mean just because you're called on to be subject to your husband, that doesn't mean that you're a slave. That doesn't mean that you're a piece of property. Rather, you see your role as an opportunity to support, to help, to willingly look to the needs of your husband and see how you can meet his needs. Because you recognize that you work best when you're working together as a team, complementing and supplementing one another, that you really need each other. As Solomon says in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, two indeed are better than one. As parents, if we are humble and selfless in that role, we're going to be approaching our role with our children as servants and providers. That's how we're going to view ourselves. We're not lords of our little domain. We're not here to just to boss our kids around, and they're not here. Sometimes we like to joke, well, that's the reason why I had kids, so they could take out the trash, right? That's not really why we have kids. They're not there to serve us and make our lives easier. We're there to serve them, to provide for them, to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And so I would suggest to you that part of that means we're going to be making time for our kids. You know, it's easy to get distracted with our stuff, what I have to do, what I have to get done, my chores, my work, this, that, or the other that's about me, and forget to make time for our kids. We don't make time for their activities. We don't make time to share in the things that they're interested in. Now, I'm not saying that you have to make your kids' activities your whole life. But you need to say, I'm going to take some of my time, and instead of using it selfishly on me, I'm going to sacrifice that and use that time to focus on them. And one of the areas where that is absolutely important is in the area of communication. If we will make time for our kids, we will be letting them know that they are really important to us. And that includes listening to them. It's sometimes exhausting to listen to little kids. Just hurry up and get to the point, right? I've got things that I've got to do. And this is, again, I'm really bad about this. Especially when I'm at home in my home office and I'm working on something and I'm trying to put some notes together or something like that. And the kids come in for the umpteenth time to ask me something. And just this last week, I lost my temper with Brianna. Because she come in to ask me a question. And instead of being selfish about the way I view my time, I need to be selfless in regards to my kids. I found this quote. I think I've shared it with you before, but it really is true. It says, listen earnestly to anything your children want to tell you, no matter what. If you don't listen eagerly to the little stuff when they're little, they won't tell you the big stuff when they're big. Because to them, all of this has always been big stuff. We've got to take the time out of our busy schedules to give to our children so that they know that they're important and valued as well. Children, you're not getting off the hook. You should approach your role as a child, a son or a daughter, as that of a helper, and a learner, and a valuable contributor to the household. In Proverbs chapter 23, verse 22, the proverb writer says, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she's old. Buy truth and do not sell it. Get wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who sires a wise son will be glad in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her rejoice who gave birth to you. Give me your heart, my son, and let your eyes delight in my ways. This is a father appealing to his son, but the same thing would be true of a daughter. He's saying, listen to what I have to share with you. Learn from my instruction. Because when you do that, you will become a valuable contributor, not just to the family, but ultimately to society. You'll grow up to be the kind of person you're supposed to be. And ultimately, kids recognize that when you do that, it will in turn bring great joy to your parents. So that means, as children, we're going to be eagerly listening to and hearing what our parents have to say. I recognize that's not what kids do, but that's what they should do. We as parents need to do our part to try to make them or enable them to want to hear and receive what we have to say. We need to, as we looked at last night, speak in such a way that it makes knowledge acceptable. It makes the hearer want to learn more. But kids, you need to recognize, despite what you may think at this point in your life, your parents do know more than you. And you would be wise to listen to their instruction. And furthermore, if you had the attitude of not a slave, but a contributor to the household, you're going to want to do what your parents ask and instruct you to do, even before you do what you want to do, without complaining. Yes, what I'm saying is chores come before playtime, because we're trying to be selfless and put others ahead of ourselves. We can also see how this might affect our relationship with our siblings. We are supporters of one another. You know, are you happy for your brother or your sister when something goes well for them? Or are you kind of secretly jealous that it didn't happen for you? Do you squabble and complain when you don't get your way? Or do you rejoice even if you're not the one who directly received the benefit? You know, as siblings, one of the greatest things we can do for one another is refrain from behavior that we know is irritating. If I know that when I do that thing, it bothers my sister, I should stop doing it, because I'm thinking about what's best for her. If I'm thinking about what's best for me, it's fun to irritate her. But she doesn't like it. So I need to think about her. We need to try instead to do things that will lift our siblings up, that will encourage and strengthen them. When we see them being picked on, we go and we stand with them. We don't let them stand alone. We're there for them. When we see that they're discouraged, we seek to buoy their spirits, whether that's by sharing a kind word of encouragement or giving them a hug, or maybe if your little sister likes kisses, you give her a kiss, because it's going to help them feel better. And finally, let me suggest that as brethren, as we think about our church family, our spiritual family, having these attitudes is going to help us to recognize our true interdependence and our need for one another. If I'm humble and selfless, I realize I can't do this without you guys. I need you. And that's going to cause me, if I'm valuing you correctly, I'm going to want to listen to what you have to say. And I'm going to want to objectively weigh each and every opinion. And together then we can come to a mutual agreement about what is best for everyone. Furthermore, if I'm humble, I'm going to be looking around within my church family and I'm going to be asking myself, what is my role? What is my function? What work can I do? And even if we realize that my role is a lowly role, we're going to do that with all of our heart. And we're not going to exercise our liberties at the expense of our brethren. We don't have time to walk through all of 1 Corinthians chapters 8 through 10. Or Romans 14 and 15 for that matter. But Paul concludes that section in Romans, where he said, you know, just because you have the right to do something, God has said it's okay, doesn't necessarily mean that in every circumstance that's the right thing to do, that you should do it. He makes the observation, and this is the attitude that humility and selflessness will allow us to have towards our brethren. He says, now we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those who are without strength, and not just please ourselves. Each of us is to please his neighbor for his good, to his edification. We're going to be looking out for what's best for everyone around us, including all of our brethren. Now, obviously, guys, what we've talked about here with these two character qualities, that's the goal. To be selfless and humble in our interactions with others, that is, in our relationships. And hopefully we can see how possessing these two characteristics are going to help us greatly in maintaining meaningful and enduring relationships with others. But as I've indicated about myself throughout this discussion, sadly, we have to acknowledge that these are qualities that far too often we get wrong. We aren't as humble or selfless as we ought to be. I know I find these qualities lacking in my life far too often. And perhaps you can relate to that. If you're like me and you realize that you need more humility, that you need more selflessness in your life, what can you do about that? Where do you start? Go back to Philippians chapter 2 as we end our lesson. Paul said in verse 3, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as a thing to be held on to, but he emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross." If I find these qualities lacking in my life, I would suggest the place where we start is by looking to our Lord. Yes, we can look at his example, and that's part of what Paul is doing here. He's saying, look at how Christ demonstrated these qualities. He sacrificed himself of so much, not for his benefit only. Make no mistake, Christ benefits from the sacrifice he made. If you don't think that, you don't understand what the whole purpose of your salvation is. One day, those who are saved and redeemed in the blood of Christ will sit around the throne of God singing his praises for all eternity. And if you don't think that that's a benefit for God, you're crazy. That's why he saved you. But he didn't do it only for himself. He did it because that's what's best for us. And we want to try to imitate that example in our lives. But as Dad suggested last night, Jesus is the key to meaningful and enduring relationships. Specifically, knowing Jesus and being in a relationship with him yourself, that is the key to all other relationships. And so I'll say again what I said last night at the end of worship. We're going to share with you lots of principles this weekend as we study together, strategies of how to improve and maintain our relationships. We're going to show you precedent from the scriptures of what we ought to be doing, of what it should look like. But you'll never realize the fullness of the benefit of living like Christ until you have totally surrendered yourself to him. So I would encourage you to humbly surrender yourself over to your Lord, that you might serve him with your life.